Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We're taking your thoughts on the Predators. Preds over the weekend, they win 7-3 against the Florida Panthers and then followed up with a 4-3 loss yesterday to Minnesota. So according to MoneyPuck.com, that puts their playoff odds at around 9%. And they're 2-4 since the All-Star break. They have five games remaining until the trade deadline coming up on March the 3rd. So needless to say, it is crunch time. Now, they do have Vancouver at home tomorrow. They have San Jose on the road Thursday and Arizona on the road on Sunday. Those are three teams that you should beat that are not good and that have punted on this season. Now, having said that, we just saw them lose to Arizona last week, and now you're going on the road, and Arizona has been playing a little bit better as of late. I threw this out there earlier. To me, to even start talking about the playoffs again, like, you have to win all three of those games. Not lose one of them in overtime, not get 5 out of 6 points, not 4 out of 6 points. You got to win all three of those games. Like, the margin for error is gone for the Nashville Predators at this point. It may already be too late, but it's certainly too late if you're losing any one of these next three games to me. So you have to do that based on the schedule that you've got coming up after that. It's just, that's where they're at in the standings right now. But the odds would tell you, the math would tell you right now, that the playoffs are a long shot. I mean, you're 7 points back of Minnesota. We've gone over the standings earlier. Right now, you're basically chasing Minnesota and Calgary. And the other teams, based on where the standings are right now, are just far enough ahead of you at this point where you can't worry about them right now if you're the Predators. It's Minnesota and Calgary, and it's three teams for one spot, and right now you're in the worst spot of those three teams to get to the playoffs.
So let's say they win the next three, and then a week from tomorrow you got a big one against the Penguins at home.
Yep.
And you win that too.
Depends on what. Well, I mean, it's, that would
and
be
your David Poile.
That would be great for if you're them. You know, some of that also depends on, all right, well, what else happens around you? Like, is Minnesota winning? Are they losing? Is Calgary winning? You know, there's a lot that goes into that. But, like if you're David Poile, would that be enough to convince you not to sell? That's the question, right? Like, is that enough to convince you not to sell? To me, and I'm not David Poile, to me, my answer is no. Like, I've seen enough. It's time to sell.
You are not David Poile.
I'm not David Poile. So that's what I think about it. Ultimately, doesn't really matter. But to me, I've seen enough. It's time to sell. Will David Poile agree with that? That's really the question that we have to find out in the next five games.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he's saying what he said here to Chase, to Skrbina, the fact that Pierre LeBrun is, you know, putting these things out. I mean,
you start to read the tea leaves.
Sure. Yeah, and that's good. I mean, he has to be thinking along those terms. But I still think if you had a pure heater, 27-1, 20-7-1.
Yes.
I'm just saying. On the Hines thing, I want to get to a couple of thoughts on Twitter, actually. Ann Kay, who writes for InsideThePreds.com and the Lockdown Predators podcast, says of Hines, easy way out of firing Hines. Okay, quote, easy way out, same coach struggling to get players to perform this season, had three career-year players, Vezina and Norris finalists last year. May not be the right fit here, but not the root of the problem. Also, NHL needs to be a league that develops new coaches as well as players. Brian the Gamer says, I wouldn't be upset. If you're going to ship off players to bring in a fresh look for this team, they should do the same and get a young coach who can come in and grow with the team. No point in keeping someone who isn't able to take you all the way, end quote. So, okay, but here's the thing. Now, and Jared has made this point, you know, what is his resume? What has he done? I mean, the whole point to me when they brought in Hines was that's what it was. This is a young coach who has been successful, you know, in terms of developing young players at different levels, and so he's going to grow with this team. So, I mean, when you say someone who can take you all the way, like, are you saying someone who has proven? Because obviously Laviolette's resume was way better than John Hines.
Sure.
But you need a change. Laviolette, the voice gets old, all that stuff with his – I mean, this happens in the league all the time, right? So my question back is basically, okay, so if you bring in a young coach who's going to grow the team, how do you know that person can take you all the way? And if you want to bring in a proven coach next, what proven successful coach is going to look at this situation and say, yep, Now, I understand sometimes it's like, well, people take
jobs.
People take head coaching jobs in the NHL. So maybe it's just a recycled coach who, you know, has had success, but it's not a good situation right now for anybody looking at this team and looking at what the next couple of years could be.
It's not. And look, to the Hines point, let's say you do that. You get to the end of the season, they miss the playoffs, and you move on from Hines. Okay. Well, is the real question to me after that comes down to, well, is Poile hiring the next guy? Because if so, like, I don't know that I sense the direction or the attempted direction that they're going changing all that much, right? Like, what I really want to know is what has this year done to the ownership group? That's really the question right now. Like, if it continues to go this way, how do Herb Fritsch and the ownership group and Bill Haslam, as he's starting to get more involved, like, how does all of that factor into this? Because we've talked about this 1,000 times. We got to the end of the year last year, and we finally heard from ownership, and Herb Fritsch talked, and it was basically like, yeah, David Poile's our hockey guy. Like, he's our hockey guy, and his contract auto-renews at the end of every year. We trust David Poile, which is fine. That's how they feel. Has this year changed that? If the results are not getting to the playoffs and you miss the playoffs, does that change the way that ownership views it? Because if it doesn't, I don't know that anything is really going to change all that much. Like, I say that I think that if they miss the playoffs this year, that John Hines is probably not going to be the coach next year. I could be totally wrong on that. Like, they may just run it back. Now, I think if that happens, if they miss the playoffs this year and they run it back with the same stuff next year, you're going to be dealing with a fan base that is just apoplectic at that point.
And when you say run it back, you're not just talking about Hines Poile, but you're talking
about – I'm talking about like everything. Let me rephrase. Like, regardless of what happens moving forward, the roster won't be the exact same next year. Like, you've got to make some decisions on guys. But, like, if – we've talked about it. You can't change it that much. Like, you have immovable contracts. You have guys that have no movement clauses. You can fill in some patches with younger players. Maybe you can sell off – I mean, you could sell off Niederreiter, maybe a Granlund, although that's becoming, I think, an increasingly harder-to-move contract. Like, it's largely going to be a lot of the same guys next year, even if you decide to sell.
I guess it's like if there's at least one significant move in there of a veteran player and you make a concerted effort to go young, which basically punting on making the playoffs next year unless you have some young players who really emerge, at least that would kind of show that you're
already gone young. Like, they that's what they did 2 years ago. They went from the second oldest team in the league to, like, the third youngest. Like, that's what they did. They got younger. And they tried to continue to make the playoffs, and they've done it, and now you're in no man's land right now.
Yeah, well, you're right. They got younger. The support players, basically, right, are a lot younger. The core is the core, but again, that's where –
you can't get rid of it.
That's right. That's where they're locked in. So someone on the text line on the whole point about Hines is like, I would feel encouraged. And no name on this one. What I believe fans are wanting to wait is for the new ownership to take over. Okay, so new ownership. But again, the encourage because of ownership. If you got that, hey, we're moving on from John Hines. Again, to me, all that says is ownership continues to say, David Poile, we trust you. You do whatever you want. David Poile fires the coach. By the way, this same texter, I think, quoted Jared here, said, John Hines for Peter Laviolette, the single worst transaction in Preds history, and it's not even close. What a terrible take by Jared. Just a terrible take.
I don't know if it's Laviolette, the worst transaction.
Laviolette never did any wrong because he likes Jared. Good God. Now I get pissed at Jared. Thank you.
I can think of a few bad ones right off the top of my head. Transaction.
Laviolette gets fired every place, okay? Like, go back in time to that point, and it was becoming completely just undoable anymore. Come on.
Right. Now, look, in fairness, though, the day after that they made that decision and they hired John Hines, there was a lot of the fan base that said, huh, really? John Hines is who you've decided to go with. And we talked – I mean, I remember being around and thinking – I mean, I'll be honest with you. My first reaction when they went with John Hines, I was like, really? That's what they're going with, huh?
Yeah.
And look –
now, that's fine. Like, if you're not going for another coach who had demonstrated winning at a high level there, that's fine. I, I get that criticism. I'm just saying, let's not do the revisionist history on, like, how could you possibly have fired Laviolette?
Oh, it was falling apart. I mean, it was.
Of course, also, some parallels to that time and now. Some of the same guys in the room.
There are some of the same guys in the room. 615-737-1025. We'll have more of your Preds thoughts to get to coming up next. 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
Such an emotional swing there. That's high and goal. The whole bench exploded, and then obviously the way it ended there. Like, what do you tell the group after a game like this, where it doesn't linger into the next game?
Yeah, I mean, I talk to them after the game. Sometimes you don't go into losses, but I think, you know, there's certain times where I think you do. It was a hard fought battle. You know, it's a tough bounce. You know, it wasn't like it was a blown assignment or something like that, where there's a mistake. It's something that happens in the game. But I think the way that we approached the weekend, you know, we had a goal to get 4 points. We only got two. You know, we split the weekend. We got to have a day off tomorrow, and then we got another big week. So, you know, we didn't have a great game against Boston, and didn't get too low on that. Came back and played two pretty good games. So we got to make sure we're in that same mindset and not sitting in this game. And, you know, whatever, you know, emotions you feel after this game, we got to bring that into Tuesday's game.
That was John Hines yesterday after the loss to Minnesota. Preds fall 4-3 on the road and lose game-winning goal by Ryan Hartman. 20 seconds left in the game. Goes basically off his chest into the back of the net. And Predators skated out of there yesterday with a 4-3 loss in regulation and collect no points. And that was a game where they really needed to have some points yesterday. 615-737-1025. Speaking of the Preds, hang out tomorrow night before the Preds game at the Superbook Lounge in Landshark Bar & Grill, Margaritaville on Broadway with 1025-1063 The Game. Place your bets with Superbook and enjoy great food and drink specials. Plus, enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Preds back in action tomorrow night, taking on the Vancouver Canucks. Got a texture that says, what about the idea of new ownership hiring Barry Trotz as GM? Is that still out there? This is from a texter on the text line. Barry Trotz is undecided to this point as to what he's going to do in the future. You know, he's been on a couple of different podcasts this year and have talked about it, including the Predators official podcast that he was on. And the last we heard, I mean, he's had some family stuff that he's been dealing with. He has been living here in Nashville. I think is open to the idea of coaching, is open to the idea of management. This is coming from him, the latest I've heard on the podcast. You know, from a coaching standpoint, I mean, let's say they moved on from Hines after this year. Like, would it make a ton of sense for Barry Trotz to be the head coach of this team? If you're the Predators, yeah. Like, from Barry Trotz's perspective, I don't know why you would do that. Like, if you're going to be another head coach, like, if Barry Trotz wants to be a head coach again, like, don't you want to
win a cup?
Win a Stanley Cup.
And he can. He can find a place where he could go in and win a Stanley Cup.
Exactly.
This is not that place.
Yeah. So that
he does have a house here.
He does have a house here. Like, coaching wise, it wouldn't make a lot of sense. If he wanted to get into the management side of things, I think that's a different discussion. He's got obviously a lot of familiarity with this team, with this organization, with people within the organization, and I think it would be a very good place for him to be on the management side of things. My question, like, would he go, like, I don't think it would be, if he was here, I don't think he'd be the GM. Like, I think David Poile is going to be the GM next year. And you can think whatever you want to about that. I understand it. But unless something has changed with ownership, like, I think David Poile is going to be the GM. So, like, is Barry Trotz interested in being an assistant or a high-level scout? Or, like, I don't know specifically what Barry Trotz would want to do on the management side of things. But, like, I don't know that the GM opportunity will be there with the Predators.
A headline. Robbie Stanley says Preds should hire Barry Trotz to be a scout.
Scout, yes.
Well done.
Barry,
well done.
Get out there.
Put it on Twitter.
Barry, we need you to go take a look at these people up there playing in Saskatchewan. Come back in 2 weeks.
Barry, could you do some hosting in the suites for a while? Barry, then we'll see if you can move up from there, okay?
Barry, we need some help at Nash Vegas. Really need you in there.
God. Hey, but you know what? All ideas should be on the table at this point.
Yes, they should.
Jared claims that he did not say that was the worst transaction. But you know what? This is a quote from the text line from your show. I believe everything I read on the text line. So you said it.
That's terrifying, kind of.
Joe throwing out fake news.
There's some interesting stuff on that text line sometimes. That does not get right on the air.
Yeah, there is that.
A lot of it.
Look, you know, we've got a lot of people saying new voices, new direction, screaming for change. I get it. I understand it. I mean, to me, the question I threw out there the last segment is the question moving forward. Ownership. What do they think about this? And is there a disconnect between the Predators fan base and the Predators ownership group? I don't know. That's the part about not having ownership talk all that much. And, we heard from him last year. So I'm glad we heard from him last year. I thought it was good that Herb Fritch got out there and spoke and offered his thoughts to the media, all those things. Obviously, a lot of that was also about the transition of Bill Haslam coming in over the next couple of years. So all that's good. But right now, I mean, you've got decisions that you have to make in terms of the direction that you want to go as a franchise. And we've talked about this. I do think the Predators fan base largely is wanting some changes to take place. Does the ownership group feel that way? Like, that's now become the question of this season to me, is where is ownership in all this, and is there any sort of sense that they want to change things up, or are they happy with the way things have been going, and they're just par for the course moving forward?
And also, look, I think Poile has been pretty adamant in his support of Hines. Now, I don't know how many situations you're going to find out there where, like, if a GM does have that power to just hire or fire coaches, if they're, like, going to, say anything publicly, questioning the coach. But, like, if you're Poile, are you okay, like, just basically admitting you screwed up that coaching hire? And, I mean, I guess it's still better. Like, so, I guess it's better than losing your job, too.
But, right.
But that would be a big admission on his part if he were to fire Hines. So I'm not ruling out Poile Hines next year with the Preds. Not ruling it out.
I mean, I think I can't rule it out. Now, again, if that happens and this continues to go this way, like, I think you're at that point, you're risking some pretty serious damage to your fan base. Like, that's the part what I'm talking about when I talk about, is there a disconnect between the Predators ownership group and the Predators fan base? Like, I can't nail it down to a percentage for you, how many Predators fans are upset with what we're seeing or visibly emotionally reacting to what we're seeing. Like, we hear from a lot of them. I don't know exactly how much of the fan base that it is, but I venture to say it's a pretty significant amount. Like, if they miss the playoffs and it's more the same looking team coming into next year and there are no changes this offseason, like, you're running a risk to me of really being off-putting to some of your fan base.
Oh, no question. I will say, really interesting this, so Saturday, so obviously Thursday, Bruins fans,
yeah,
like, it was, right, that was kind of a takeover. Now, they're having this incredible, like,
historic
season, and they're Bruins fans all over the place, so, and the Preds fans are okay unloading tickets at times. But I will say that Saturday, I was like, I went to the game, I was like, man, what is it going to be like in here? And you know what? It was actually, it was good. It was a good atmosphere.
Yeah.
It was pretty much full of Preds fans. So kudos to the Preds fans. I will say also, though, that, like, the goalie chant, I think it was like after one of the goals, it was like three people. It's all your fault. It's all your fault. So there's some of the energy has been taken out. But still, overall, I was impressed.
Well, look, I think Predators fans deserve a lot of credit. I mean, I remember the days where you used to have to worry about whether or not that building was going to be full a lot, and you just don't worry about it anymore, which is great. And look, credit to the Predators on the business side of things. There's a lot that they've done right. There's no question about it. But I do wonder, though, like, I do think that some of the fan base is like, man, yeah, wake me up again when y'all decide to change what you're doing. And I just don't know how ownership feels about that. We keep talking about new ownership. It's still going to be a year or two before Haslam is in charge, quote unquote. Like, are they waiting around to make any decisions before that happens? Like, I don't know. I don't know what their strategy is.
That's a good question. Brandon says, I'm excited to see Poile trade Janot for a 6th-round pick. Then Janot will score 6 goals in 8 games for his new team.
It's also like some real bad timing right now. Like, Tolvanen continuing to score left and right, it's not helping.
Nah.
It's not helping this conversation for the Predators.
I've been poo-pooing that from the start, but he keeps scoring.
He just keeps on scoring. And, I announced I put out yesterday on Twitter the Pecorine statue coming up on March 25th, and they're playing Seattle that game. And Just a whole lot of, well, can't wait for Ellie Tolvanen to ruin that night. It's going to be awesome.
A Tolvanen hat trick to honor this, to Hunter Pecorino.
It'll be good stuff. 615-737-1025. We'll get back into the Preds coming up here in just a few minutes. We'll have Corey Curtis joining the show at 8 o'clock, get his thoughts on the state of the Preds franchise. Coming up next, we'll get into a little college basketball. Tennessee falls again to Kentucky over the weekend, and Vanderbilt continuing to ascend in the SEC. We'll get into all that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Dribbling, three, two, he just drops the ball, lets it roll, and the buzzer sounds, and the game is over, and Kentucky has swept Tennessee. The Cats, 66. The 10th-ranked Vols, 54.
Another rough one for Tennessee on Saturday. They fall at the hands of Kentucky once again. As you heard in that clip, Kentucky completes the season sweep of the Vols. And Tennessee had somewhat of a nice pushback in the second half. They were down 20 at halftime in that game. 39-19 was the score at the half for the Vols. 19.
Yeah, they got it to – what'd they get it to? They get to five?
I think they got it to five, yeah.
Got it to five, yeah. Michelle Perry, because we can call you that again now, because now John Keller Perry's fine. He, you're not firing him? He's okay?
Yeah, he's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
When's the last – do you know the last time Kentucky swept Tennessee?
2011-2012.
Okay, so the national championship season with Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
And Tennessee, I think, was –
well, no, that was 12-13, right?
No.
No, that was 11-12.
No, Louisville won it all in 13, yeah. Okay, so –
that no longer exists.
Well, that's true. Yeah, no one
that season didn't happen.
Yeah, no one won it that year.
Yeah.
I just would like to make a point right now. I have not said anything about it, not even in the first segment. I didn't even tweet until this morning.
That's wild.
That is wild.
Like all weekend you didn't talk any trash about it? Why?
Nope.
How come?
I just didn't. I just let the wind speak for itself, and I just, you know, scrolled through Twitter, and people were – the tweets I saw were just – The tennis or Kentucky looks so desperate and all this stuff to win. You know, the Vols, they're fine. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Well, the Vols are not fine.
Just take the L. Not a big deal.
I think the Vols are.
The Vols still have a great resume, you know, but they won. And I don't need to talk trash.
Well, that's the wild thing is that this is, yeah, my point. I didn't realize it went back that far. But, like, Kentucky's had better teams than Tennessee a lot in the last few years. Have they been similar? Kentucky's
this one isn't.
No, I mean, this is the year they sweep them when Tennessee is like actually way better than them. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, maybe they'll play again in Nashville. I think Tennessee is okay. And again, I'm not taking away from your Cats. Okay, it's a good win for the Cats. Good week. I mean, you win that game at Mississippi State this one. I think you're on the good side of the bubble right now. But Josiah James and Julian Phillips being out was a killer for them. And you know what? Jemiah Manchak, give him credit. He was the one Vol who I thought played well the whole game,
yep.
And he had to step in. But, like, they're not – they beat Alabama. They beat number one Alabama without those two guys. And they controlled that game. Home road kind of means a lot in college basketball. But they're not going to be great without those guys. So, I do think they're fine as far as, you know, they're still going to be, I think, a three – they were the number one 3 seed when the official early, which I like that the NCAA does this. You know, here's the seeds.
Yep.
Tennessee was the 13. So they were right on the verge. If they beat Kentucky the other day, then right now they'd be a 2 seed. They're still, to me, solidly a 3. And I think they're okay. This game at Texas A&M is big in terms of, you know, that's a huge win they could get on the road tomorrow. But, you know, it was a disappointing – no question. They played terrible in the first. Though I will say some of it was just like they could not hit a shot to save their lives. Now, do you take too many threes? Yes, you do take too many threes. That's a consistent.
But how many times have we talked about this year? They could not hit a shot to save their lives. I mean, they had 19 points in the first half.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, too much. Too often. And again, I think it's sometimes selection. Some games you have bad games. And is it likely that they're going to go in March and not have a game like that where they're clanking? No.
But I think the biggest issue was Zakai Ziegler getting in foul trouble because you don't have a guy who can be your backup point guard. Like, take Julian Phillips out and Josiah James Jr.
And Ziegler, right.
If Ziegler, you know, is out and can't run the offense for them, that I think was probably the biggest problem. Yeah, shot selection, but not having him in the game the first half for a majority of it, it's a killer, and then him fouling. Well, I think he fouled out at the end, right?
At the very end, yeah. Yeah, and he played well in the second half. No, I agree. That was tough. I mean, Shibuya had foul trouble too, so
yeah.
Kentucky had that.
And they had C.J. Frederickson severe out as well.
Right.
So.
Yeah, no, Kentucky's had injuries for sure. The Ziegler thing is that's the thing. When he plays great, he gets in the lane, he gets people shots. The shots off penetration or inside out shots are a much higher percentage. They can at times look really good. I worry about him, not foul trouble. I worry about him wearing down. That's my big question. But they'll get James back. They'll get Phillips back. Mayshak, not to me, benefits from this stretch. Sometimes it's a little blessing in disguise when you have injuries. And, you know, go inside. That's my whole thing. Go inside. They have the guys who
right,
go inside.
Right, but they're not going to do it. Like they haven't
well,
they done
do
it all
sometimes.
Year.
Well, no, that's not true. Sometimes they do. Like when they crush
but
Texas.
But they don't do it enough.
Well, right.
And
well,
why is that all of a sudden going to change?
Well, there's film. Like, go watch the Texas film. There you go. That's how you play. You played that way for a whole game. Crush
right,
them.
But they,
that's a one seed.
It's not consistently.
No, I know.
We've been talking about this all year. Like, it's not just all of a sudden going to change where they're like, well, hey, we're just going to go inside all the time.
Well, if they're smart, it will.
Well, what's been stopping them?
I don't know.
Okay, then. Like, why is it all of a sudden going to change?
All I'm saying is there's examples of them playing the right way. And not just like, these aren't just remote examples either. They've still been way more good than bad this year. They've still had way more good performances than bad performances. They get into these stretches sometimes where it kills them. And look, the problem is then you have some games where you play like that and you hit your shots.
Right.
And it's fool's gold. I think they're okay. I do.
I do think
they're
so.
I'm not picking them to go to the Final Four.
They will not be passing the 30.
I think I may have to bet you on the second week.
I will say this, guys. I think our show has some pull in the college basketball world because Robbie fired Jerry Stackhouse and Vanderbilt has been on a heater, and I fired Cal and Kentucky has been on a heater. So now fire Rick Barnes and that'll be the effect.
I was actually just gonna say that. It is time for Rick Barnes to go. Message board.
Yes. Yeah. Message board.
Did you see the message board geniuses?
Oh yeah.
They had a whole collection. It was all like, it's time to move on.
Who are you going to get?
Well, they said that they were playing inconsistently. Message board user. Not inconsistently, unconsistently.
Non-consistent
yes.
play by the Vols.
Yes.
Yeah, I can't do that. Sorry. I can't do the fire. But that is amazing.
You could help fans.
It is amazing that the Stackhouse and Calipari have.
Now look, I got Princeton fan going. I got Austin Hooper going. We'll keep his thing going, man.
Oh, yeah, Austin Hooper earlier this year.
We can just keep it going.
It's amazing. Speaking of, so the Preds are about to take off. Speaking of Stackhouse, big win over Auburn.
Yeah,
I was in the house Saturday night.
Ezra Mann.
Ezra Mannion has gone from early season. I was like, oh, that's tough, man. It's just not going to work out to, wow, who can get in front of that guy and stop him? And then Liam Robbins right now is, you know.
Liam Robbins is playing at a very high level.
Yes,
last 2
played
weeks.
At an NBA big man level. Yeah. So Vanderbilt, you know, they're still – well, actually, Shelby Mass, USA Today, has them the third team out right now. Now, we talked about this earlier off the air, and I agree with you. I think that seems a little optimistic. Their number – the computers still hate Vanderbilt. But at LSU, Florida at home this week.
Yep.
You win those games, you're 17-12, and you're going to Kentucky. And I tell you what, if that's the case, and they need to not just win these games. I know this is hilarious. They need to like win with some margin, if possible. And I think that's possible. They could be going into Kentucky with a game that if they win that, to me, then they have to be on the right side of the bubble.
I agree.
And the fact that they could even get to that point in this season is pretty freaking amazing.
Well, I think if they can keep this up, regardless of whether or not they go and beat Kentucky, which I agree, if they were able to do that, then we're having a different conversation. But let's say they win these next two, they lose to Kentucky, and then they beat Mississippi State after that. Like, you've then put yourself in a point where the SEC tournament matters a great deal to you if you're Vanderbilt. And I didn't think it would this time 2 weeks ago.
You agree. If that's how it works out, win 3 of 4, that puts you at 18-13.
Good math, Joe.
Again, you know, thank you. I mean, it comes down to your wins, the quality of your wins, your quad one, all that stuff, right? The one issue here, this is kind of weird, but so like right now Vanderbilt is, they are tied for fourth, but they're actually fourth because they have the tiebreaker over Auburn. So if they get the double bye in the SEC tournament and they play on Friday, which is very possible if they finish 3 or 4, they're probably going to be in the top four. That's good, but like they actually could use a Thursday game against a good team for a win.
They could, yeah.
You know? So being this good in the SEC could actually work against you because you need more opportunities, but again.
So what are they in the SEC currently?
So they're tied for fourth. So right now they would get that double bye and not start until Friday.
Right.
Like last year, for example, they're trying to make a run. They beat Alabama.
Almost beat Kentucky last year.
Almost beat Kentucky, but they beat Alabama. So there's a big, I mean, you know, they needed to beat Kentucky. But the Alabama game is a bit like a resume win. You can get a resume win on a Thursday, and in this case, they're going to be possibly too good in the league to get it. If they aren't, then that means that they've lost so much that they probably have to win the SEC tournament to get in the field.
Right. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode. You can check it out every morning at 745. Tomorrow, it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty and Superbook Sports. If you correctly guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game tomorrow night, you win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Your next chance to participate is tomorrow morning at 8:45. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. You can check it out here on the program every morning at 7:45, either the Rex Rant, the Rob Rant, the Red Rant. We have lots of options to offer you. Joe Rex Road, today is your turn. The floor is yours.
Well, thank you. First of all, I need to clean something up here. Thanks to Mitch Light for texting me in. Yeah, Vanderbilt is tied for fifth. Because, I mean, you know, I know it's hard for me to go 1, 2, 3, 4. Kentucky and Tennessee are tied for fourth, a game ahead. Vanderbilt and Auburn tied for fifth, game back. Bottom line, real quick. So, like I said, if you are playing on Friday, you're missing an opportunity. Now, granted, if you're the 5, you're going to play the 12 or 13. So that doesn't help you anyway. If you could be like the 6 and maybe like the 11 is like Missouri or Mississippi State. Now there's a resume win. Then you can go into so whatever. If you're in the top 4 and you're Vanderbilt,
just win the tourney.
You'll take that. Well, there's that too. You know, you have much better chance of winning the tourney if you don't have to play those extra games, right? So
rematch them in Bama.
What's that?
I said a rematch between them and Bama.
I'm sure they'd probably like to get another crack there. You know what we forget is they actually were with Alabama here like late. Like, it was a close game, and then
it was not close down there.
It was not, and then you fired Stackhouse, and then
did I fire him?
Yeah, not quite. You just said his seat was hotter than Hines.
Yeah,
so
it's worked out well.
Oath, how things have changed.
Yeah, things have changed a little bit.
I would not give the same answer.
Yes, yes. Well, today I want to talk about fungus. Okay. Either of you, Michelle's the expression on her face. What?
Did you say fungus?
I said fungus. We're going to talk about fungus. I am freaked the hell out right now.
Okay.
And I need to talk this through. Have you guys seen or heard of the show The Last of Us?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You watch it?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what this is?
Yeah, I watched like 10 minutes and I hated it.
Played the game, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I'm familiar with this because my oldest, Jack, showed me the games. He's like, this is an example of like storytelling through a video game. And it was amazing, you know? And then the show comes out, and actually, I am not a zombie show person at all. The Walking Dead held me for about 3 episodes. I was like, nah. But so far, I think this is really good. So it's HBO, right? Yes. HBO.
Yes.
So anyway, for those of you who don't know,
it's freaky.
Basically, it's like a zombie show, but what it is like it's that these fungal infections get into humans, and then they basically like take over their body, which, I mean, to me sounds ridiculous. And yet,
it's based on a real fungus, by the way.
Yes. And I'm reading this story in USA Today. Zombie ant fungus in humans? Climate change sparks fungi fears. Some serious and some silly. And I read this thing, and I want, so basically, to summarize, like, they're getting to the point now, the climate change part of this, where some of these fungi can thrive. Normally, it's like it's cold-blooded animals is all that they can infect and, like, basically take over their bodies, okay? Well, now it's starting to get to where they can, mammalian temperatures, they can handle them, okay? Warm-blooded mammals, like us. So I'm going to tell you, I just want to read this to you, okay?
I'm going to start crying over here. Jeez, Joe.
So the zombie ant fungus, like, there's a, okay, so they, this is the, I'm reading this to USA Today, Elizabeth Weiss. It says, so this fungus, and this is the one that's based on, the show is based on, Ophiocordyceps unilateralis.
Sure.
Okay? That's the zombie ant fungus. They get into these ants, they coerce the ant to perform a, quote, death grip, biting down on a leaf or twig so it's affixed to that spot, then kills the host, uses the host to reproduce. The fungus emerges from the corpse, usually the head, sprays out spores that rain down on unsuspecting ants below, infecting them. This happens in nature. Fungus is doing this in nature. But listen to this one. Massospora cicadina.
Yep. Sciatica.
You know this?
Nope.
It does sound like Sciatica. This is a fungus with amphetamine-like symptoms that infects 13 and 17-year cicadas, okay? There's this picture of cicada. Listen to what this thing does. It infects cicadas, eats away their abdomen and genitals, replacing them with a plug of fungus covered in spores. Then it causes the males to become hypersexualized. Quote from a doctor, the cicada will fly around and try to mate as it spreads a sexually transmissible disease through the powder on its genitals. It also changes the behavior of the males so they pretend to be females to get other males to mate with them. Are you listening to this?
I'm listening to it.
I know I'm just reading this story, but like it freaked me out. Okay, this is back to the story Elizabeth writing. This doctor has been studying the fungus for years, still doesn't know how it manages to create an amphetamine-like substance that gives the colonized cicada, quote, increased stamina and attention span, even as they're being devoured by the fungus from the inside. And this is how the story ends. This is how the story ends from this doctor. Quote, you don't have to think about your abdomen being consumed by fungus when you're high.
Well, I guess that's a good point.
If fungus can do this to a cicada and somehow has this, like, this incredible intelligence to make this happen, when is this happening to humans? The Last of Us is real.
Last of Us is coming down. This seems a little bit more realistic than The Walking Dead.
I mean, this is freaky, man.
Yeah, it is.
I just have my jaw dropped back here.
Fungus.
Wait, so do they mean like eating mushroom? Like you can't tell if your abdomen's eating you if you're high? Was that the...
Well, so this fungus gets into these cicadas and creates this substance that like, and then takes over their body and makes them mate. Like what? Listen, this is just one of those moments. You're 30. You're...
25.
I'm 50, and I'm glad.
Joe.
Good luck, y'all.
By the time I'm your age, a whole lot of stuff I could be dealing with, man.
Dude, by the time I'm your age, I'm going to be like, oh, Rex wrote on February 20th, 23. He told us. He warned us all.
Like, and so in this show, when they have this, it's episode 2 or 3, they have, like, when the fungus, they show the doctor in Indonesia, you know what I'm talking about, and they get into the mouth with the fungus.
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
Well, I didn't
just
know,
one more thing for us to worry about.
I didn't know until recently that the zombie ant fungus was a real thing. Like, I thought this was just part of the game. It's a real thing.
Yeah. And, like, I know that this is just in the show, but they have a doctor in 1966 at the beginning talking about how this is a possibility.
Yeah.
Let's just pretend it's not real.
All right. Let's go back to who we're going to fire on the Preds, by golly.
I mean, I'm looking up the zombie ant fungus that you brought to our attention here today on the program. A lot of articles about the zombie ant fungus out there coming out in the last couple of days, including some from this morning, USA Today this morning. A lot of activity out there in the zombie ant fungus stuff.
Yeah, so The Last of Us
it's awakened us.
Yeah, it has awakened us. But
so you can only get it, though, if they spray you, the cicadas.
Good thing they only come out every 13 to 17 years.
Yeah, I really don't know. I'm just afraid.
615-737. Chase McCabe texted us. What in the blue hell did I just turn on? This from Chase McCabe.
Hey, sorry, Chase. No, we're trying to do a public service for people who are going to die.
615-737-1025. This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 745. LD from McMinnville says, did you not know that a fungus has a defense mechanism? They destroy from within. I thought that was general knowledge. This from LD from McMinnville.
Oh, I thought that it was general knowledge that they create an amphetamine and take over your genitals. Duh.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2. We'll get his thoughts, maybe on the zombie ant fungus. We'll get his thoughts on the Predators and the state of their franchise as well. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.